Blog Talk Radio.
Monday, 56 degrees under a cool ocean flow as we near Memorial Day weekend. We welcome you inside on this day after Rory McIlroy wins the Wells Fargo Championship. We'll get to that in a second. We will spend a lot of time talking basketball with Jared Dubin, who will be joining us momentarily. To talk about the conference finals in the East and the West in the NBA. But first, we do touch on Rory McIlroy. And look, it's abundantly clear that when Jordan Spieth left stage right at Augusta, everybody else walked in stage left and said, okay, we got to get going here. You know, it was, I think, a wake-up call. And as Jimmy and Nick pointed out over the weekend, you look at who the winners have been since counting Augusta. Jordan, Jim Furyk, bona fide winner at Hilton Head, a former U.S. Open champion. Justin Rose, former U.S. Open champion, bona fide. You look at all these guys, hello, sorry about that, I have no idea if we're still connected or if you can hear me. We'll find out when Mr. Dubin calls. Let's now bring in the guy who writes for many different sports media entities to talk about the National Basketball Association, and that is Jared Dubin. Hello, Jared.
Hey, man. How's it going?
I'm good. Thank you. Sorry, I had a technical issue, so I'm glad we got that figured out. All right.
No worries.
NBA playoffs, interesting time of the year. Let's start with the Hawks in the Eastern Conference. I feel like all year the Atlanta Hawks have been underappreciated by a lot of NBA fans. And you're somebody who watches as much basketball as anyone I know, and then the following morning you sit there and watch it again to dissect it all. Are the Hawks being appreciated enough for the season that they've had?
I would say they were somewhat overlooked, with the exception of that, you know, incredible streak that they went on in the middle of the season, just simply because they don't have, you know, that signature superstar player that, you know, people would keep attention on. They're sort of like a Spurs light almost. They definitely play sort of the same style where they spread you out, and the goal is, you know, not just to shoot threes, but to use their threes so that your defense is spread out and they can also get to the rim. And it's very unselfish basketball, and they don't have any one guy that's going to dominate scoring. I think all their starters were somewhere between like 12 and 17 points a game or something like that. Now, there was a week where the Hawks starting five was the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. So I do think there's a little bit of a lack of appreciation, but I'm not necessarily thinking that's the case going into the series with Cleveland. Just because I think people know at this point how good the Hawks were in the regular season, and the lack of respect is more the fact that they struggled through the first two rounds than it is anything about, you know, the construction of their team.
And this is a Hawks team that, as you hinted there at the end, could have, you know, very easily have been overtaken by the Wizards if a couple balls bounced right. I think, you know, a lot of NBA
or
fans...
Or if John Wall wasn't hurt. You know, if
yeah.
John Wall doesn't miss a couple games, you know, that series might turn out differently.
Great point. I think there's a lot of maybe casual NBA fans that would like to see a Hawks, sorry, a Cavs-Warriors finals. It's probably what the people in the NBA offices want and what the folks over at ESPN want. For those who have overlooked the Hawks, what is the enticing factor, so to speak, for why they should be invested in seeing them win? Because it seems like if the Hawks make the finals, it is a big victory for unselfish basketball and the fact that a unit of guys who are not superstars can still win in a league dominated by superstars.
I think there's sort of two main selling points for the Hawks. I think one is, you know, if you enjoyed watching the Spurs in the finals the last 2 years, and, like, how could you not have? Well, you'll love watching the Hawks, too. You know, like I said, they're sort of a Spurs light kind of team. They do things very much the same way, especially offensively. You know, lots of pick and rolls, pinging the ball around the perimeter, lots of ball movement. It's when they're really on their game, it's incredible to watch and so much fun. And then the other thing would just be, you know, to get a new appreciation of Al Horford, one of, if not the most underrated players in the league. He's just been incredible on both ends for a long time. One of the most versatile big men in the league, you know, able to post up, to run pick and roll, to run pick and pop. Very good screen setter, also able to sort of play off the ball as a spot up guy. You know, has range now to corner threes, but also a lot in the mid range. He's just a very, very good player that not a lot of people know how good he is. And if they were to make it to the finals, it would be a whole new stage for him and Paul Millsap as well. It's sort of a light version of Horford, just like the Hawks are a light version of the Spurs.
Everybody, when Kevin Love went down, thought that the Cavs could be in big trouble, but they really played some impressive basketball as that series with Chicago went along. Obviously, Chicago had their own injury issues. How do you think the Cavs match up to the Hawks?
I think it's interesting with the Cavs because, you know, they did wind up playing well in those last two games of the series, but they were about a second and a half away from going down 3-1. That whole thing could have turned out differently if LeBron doesn't make that game-winning jumper. As far as their matchup with the Hawks, I'm pretty sure, if I'm remembering correctly, that the Hawks... I want to, you know, just double-check that very quickly. And I'm bringing myself to the page right now. But it's also obviously a much different Cavs team now. Or sorry, the Hawks went 3-1 against the Cavs, not 3-0. It's a much different Cavs team now. You know, they have J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, Timofey Mozgov. A lot of their rotation has changed. And, you know, now that Kevin Love is out, it's also a much thinner rotation. So that might counterbalance each other. It's going to be interesting to see how the Cavs, you know, match up with the Hawks defensively. I think we know what the Hawks are going to do. They're going to put Damari Carroll on LeBron for the most part. That's a lot of what they did in the regular season. But they'll throw him some different looks, especially because Tabo Sefolosha is out. But I'm interested to see who LeBron guards. You know, do they have him guard Carroll and sort of a spot-up shooter and cutter? Or are they going to put him on Paul Millsap, who's a much bigger threat to score? And, you know, maybe go small a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how that matchup shakes out.
Talking with Jared Dubin, who writes about the NFL for CBSSports.com and writes about basketball for more websites than golf courses. I've played over the years, I've played on a lot of golf courses. If LeBron makes the finals, where would this rank in terms of jobs he's had to do to get there? Because he's had some interesting team makeups, and obviously, you know, one of his main pieces here is out, and Kyrie hasn't been healthy through this run through the playoffs. Where would you rank this if they can win this series?
in terms of the whole playoff run or just the Hawks?
The whole playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, then you're talking about you're going through, you know, one of the weaker seven seeds we've seen in a while in that Celtics team, and then sort of a hobbled Bulls squad that didn't have Rose at full strength, didn't have Noah at full strength, was missing Pau Gasol for a game. I would think that, you know, as good as the Hawks are, and they are very good, it would be one of the easier roads to the finals that LeBron's had, especially when you look at the last few years where they've had to take on both, you know, the Bulls and really, really tough Pacers squads that defended the Heat as well as any other team that we've seen in a while, except maybe, you know, the Spurs in last year's finals. But I would say, yeah, that it's probably one of the, off the top of my head, one of the easier runs to the finals out of, you know, if he gets there, I think it would be five or no, six that he's gone to.
I'm talking with Jared Dubin here. And LeBron certainly lived. It's fascinating to me how LeBron has managed to have all these different casts of characters, and in tough Eastern Conferences, weak Eastern Conferences, and he still always seems to have him and his teams there right in the thick of things, which is always the hallmark of a good champion. Let's flip to the West. The job Steve Kerr has done with this Warriors squad through thick and through thin and through blowout victories, and then the way they bounced back in Game 4 after the horrible shooting performance from Steph Curry in Game 3, the fact that he told him and Diggy to play golf because that would be a stress reliever for them, it really seems like Kerr has pushed all the right buttons. Knowing how smart Steve Kerr was, did you ever think it would be this successful for him in his first year coaching these guys?
I don't think that you could ever predict that anyone will coach one of, you know, the 10 best regular season teams of all time. You know, that's just not a realistic prediction. You know, that said, Steve has done a great job, and they have a really good staff of assistant coaches there too, especially, you know, Alvin Gentry is sort of their offensive coordinator type of guy, and Ron Adams, who was an assistant with Doc Rivers with the Celtics and then with Tom Thibodeau with the Bulls. He's sort of their defensive coordinator type of coach. You know, surrounding yourself with those type of guys who have been in the league and been assistant coaches and really good assistant coaches for a long time, that's going to help you have success. You know, and that said, this Warriors team was very good defensively the last few years, even under Mark Jackson. And, you know, I asked Kerr earlier in the year, you know, where his influence is, because he's talked about throughout the season that he's taken a little bit from Phil Jackson, from Greg Popovich, from Jerry Sloan in building his offense. So I asked where, you know, his influences came with the defense that they're playing, and he said, no, we're just basically doing the same stuff that they were doing the last few years, just ramped up the switching a little bit more because Draymond is in the starting lineup. So I think that that's a testament to how good they were defensively the last couple of years. But it also shows you, you know, how much they've changed and how much better they are offensively. That just, you know, making themselves more free-flowing, opening things up a little bit, has taken them from sort of a mid-run playoff team to an all-time great team, at least in the regular season, if they finish this out, one of the best teams of all time.
And you think this is one of the top 10, well, I assume you mean statistically top 10 regular season teams of all time, but do you think
if
they were to go on and... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, they're one of eight teams, I think, pretty sure it's eight, to outscore their opponents in the regular season by at least 10 points a game. Really just incredible. And, you know, they're the first team to win 67 games in... I don't remember how many years, so it's a lot.
Yeah. This brings up a fascinating question, and I'm not the first to ask this, but, they have not played a lot of pressure-packed, tight games in the regular season. Is that a concern for you as these series go on and as presumably, especially against a Rockets team that is riding all this unexpected momentum coming off the series comeback that they've just come off of, do you think that's a concern for them that they haven't been in tight situations in the fourth quarter?
I don't think so. First, because, you know, it's usually the mark of a better team when you're blowing teams out and don't have to play close games. That's usually more indicative of a good team than a team that wins a lot of their close games. Most of the time, close games in the long run, they're going to even out, and your record's going to regress sort of towards winning half of them and losing half of them. But this Warriors team rarely played in close games. But when you do look at their numbers in close games, they just blew other teams off the floor. It was absolutely insane how good they were when games actually did get close in the last 5 minutes or so. So I'm not particularly worried about them in that regard, just because, you know, they usually don't play them. And then, you know, when they did get in close games, they were, I'm looking at it right now, they were the best team in the league in close games. So they were the best team all season long for a reason. And it's because they blow teams out a whole lot, and when they do get in close games, they win them.
Talking with Jared Dubin about the NBA playoffs. Now the Rockets are here off what's one of the epic collapses from the Clippers. What's your read on this team? Because they were getting blown out, and then the second team rallied them back. And it's odd when backups rise back, because then as a coaching staff you start thinking, you know, is a lineup change necessary? Do we need to shake out who's starting, who's getting the focus because of the cohesiveness of a second unit which had so much success, like the Rockets one did in game six, game six. What's your read on Houston? Because they got a ton of momentum, but it is interesting how that comeback happened.
It, to me, the Rockets are the best story of the season, honestly. It's incredible that they're in the position they are. You know, they were missing Dwight Howard for half the season. They lost Patrick Beverley multiple times in the season. They lost Donatus Motiejunas down the stretch of the season. And somehow they won 56-57 games. And they were the second seed in the toughest Western Conference in recent memory. It's incredible that they were able to do that, and especially that they were able to be as good as they were defensively without Dwight for half of the season. And now for this team to, you know, missing two starters for the entirety of the playoffs to now be in the Western Conference Finals is just incredible. I mean, it's a testament to James Harden, to how well Dwight Howard has played in the playoffs, and to the moves that Daryl Morey made in the regular season to pick up guys like Josh Smith and Corey Brewer and Pablo Prigioni, who have sort of propelled that second unit, and then Smith to move into the starting lineup ahead of Terrence Jones for the last few games of that series against the Clippers as well. It's really just incredible what that team's been able to do.
So how do you see this series playing out?
Oh, man. I mean, lying to myself if I were to say that I expected anything other than the Warriors to win it, and fairly handily. I think Golden State was 4-0 against Houston in the regular season. James Harden struggled pretty badly against them, if I remember correctly. I'm looking at it now. Houston shot 40% from the field and 29% from three against Golden State. They didn't make quite as many trips to the free throw line as they normally do. Their defense got absolutely blitzed against the Warriors. I don't quite expect it to be a blowout, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors won it in five or six games.
And how do you see the East shaking out?
Oh, man, the East is a little bit tougher. The Hawks did have success against Cleveland in the regular season. But again, that was before they, you know, sort of turned over what is now half of their rotation. Just like I've done the last few years, I'm just going to roll with LeBron in the East. I think that that's the smart play. And I would think then that the Cavs will win probably at home in six games.
Talking with Jared Dubin here. Jared, let's take a step back for a second. As you look, you know, because one of the things I like to ask guests is you know, what do they view the state of blank as? The East has been so weak, except for the top part. The West has obviously been dominant. This is a league that has seen some teams in big markets like the Knicks and the Lakers fall on hard times lately. Do you view what we've been looking at this season as a successful season in terms of the overall NBA? Do you think this is how can I put this? Do you think that what we've seen continues a positive streak, or does these teams that have faltered need to step up to put this into a quote unquote glory age unquote? And I know that you know, this may sound like a cliche question, but do you see where I'm going with this?
I do see where you're going, and you know, I do view the season as a success for the NBA. You know, the Western Conference was this year, you know, maybe the best conference we've seen at least in the last decade or so. I mean, it was just absolutely incredible. Specifically, you know, the Southwest Division with Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Memphis, and New Orleans, all five of those teams made the playoffs. And all won at least 45 games. It's really incredible. And, you know, Oklahoma City, despite missing Durant and Westbrook and Ibaka for a lot of the season, was right there as well. You know, yes, the East has been on sort of a downswing compared to the West for a good while now. But, you know, if you think about it in terms of the, you know, comparative history of, you know, however long we expect the NBA to last, it's a very short period of time, you know, and eventually the cycle will reverse itself. You know, when that'll happen, who knows, but at some point, it's, you know, the West can't possibly be so much stronger than the East for the rest of eternity. But in terms of sort of signature teams struggling, you know, the league is in very good shape. They had they set an attendance record this season again. And that's despite the Knicks being, for most of the year, the worst team in the league, and despite the Lakers being one of the five worst teams in the league. You know, you've seen over the last 15 years or so, the league does not need the Knicks to be good to be a successful league. You know, they've exploded in popularity and in the amount of money that they bring in. They just signed a massive national TV and media rights deal. You know, it's obviously, I would say, better for the league when those marquee teams are good, but they just simply do not need the Knicks or the Lakers to be the league's powerhouse teams in order to have success. I think that this season, as much as any, with teams like the Hawks and the Cavs and the Warriors and the Rockets and the Blazers at the top of the standings, testament to that as much as anything.
Final thing, and this is the oddball Jay Show question of the day. Do you have any comments on what we've seen in the world of golf over the last month?
Oh, man, I've got to say, you know, if you had my brother on the program right now, he would be able to tell you a lot about what's gone on in the world of golf. But I wouldn't be able to talk intelligently about it. I know Rory McIlroy is still good, and I know Tiger Woods made the cut at a tournament, and that's pretty much it.
Steph Curry is currently entered in the Cal State Amateur Tournament. His qualifier is on June 1st. The finals start June 4th. Obviously, it looks like...
Yeah, he's not going to be playing in that tournament because he's going to be preparing for the NBA Finals.
Yeah. do you think he'll be happy if he ends up with a ring and does not end up with the Cal State Amateur title?
I think that would probably make him just a little bit happier.
Just a tad, I think. Just a tad. Jared Dubin, the man who writes for a lot of websites and does a great job giving you the inside X's and O's look at the NBA because he played and he sees the game from a different view than the rest of us. Thanks, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
That is it for this edition of Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. We will see you next week. Apologies for the technical difficulties during the monologue, but those things happen sometimes. And we will see you right back here next week. Have a great night, everybody. Take care.